electrical banana. And so I flew to London. I was back from Greece, and back on the charts, the US charts, that was. I dropped by the Melody Maker offices and chatted with Bob Dorbon. He congratulated me on the gold disc, and he wondered when it might be gracing the racks of Britain's music shops. I couldn't tell him, but I let it be known that I was back to work, refreshed from living in a stone house on Paros with windows full of mountains. I wanted to record again, and the songs were ready to go. I knew I would have to paddle backwards a bit to let the UK audience catch up with me, but I felt serious about communicating. In one of the new press articles, I gushed, "We've been through the it's in to be way out bit, the it's in to take LSD bit. Now it would be in to love, because that's the product of it all. Through all the best writers, there is the music strain of love. They have compassion. Love and compassion." I was still considered a trifle foolish for talking about such things. The constant jibes in the British press about my love of beauty had long left a false impression of my work. The truth is, I wished to present the possibility of self-change, and it was to this end that I directed my energy. My early reading of the Diamond Sutra when I was 16 years old was still with me, as I suggested that only through self-change could the whole world change. This was very clear to me. My songs encouraged introspection, and soon millions of young people would join my search for the way within. I also claimed that reincarnation is a reality. The tree never died, as the seeds lived on. All through 1966, my message continued to be viewed as suspect. But what did I care? So much fine music would be created by so many fine new artists those last months of 1966. You only have to spin a few discs to dig the drift. You had to be 17 million miles west of nowhere to miss the point. It was clear. The Maydevale flat had had its day. George Harrison led Gypsy and me to our next pad, the home of London sculptor David Wynne, who lived on Wimbledon Common and worked in an atmosphere far from the usual pop music world. We moved into his comfortably bohemian lifestyle with pleasure. It is with great affection I recall the time I lived in the old rambling house, which was the family home and studio of David and Jilly Wynne. David had met the Beatles in their Paris hotel during the crazy early days of Beatlemania. He had sketched them for a bronze sculpture that he would cast. David would sculpt four heads, each head joined to the other, as they were in their life at the time. Other sculptures of his include Boy with a Dolphin on the banks of the Thames, the Tyne God in Newcastle, for which Gypsy had been the model, and Girl with Doves in Sloane Square, London. There is another curious work by David Wynne, which millions of people touch every day in Britain. It is the relief on the 1973 50p coin of the realm. There on the reverse side, a circle of hands. Without prompting, I guessed the owner of each hand correctly. It was a member of David's family. Jilly, his wife. Johnny, Eddie, Rowley, his boys. And of course, David himself. David worked in his studio. Gypsy wrote stories, and I composed songs. One day, David expressed his interest in sculpting a head of Joan Baez. I called her up, and she readily agreed. Joni would sit for David in the large studio as he made the clay model from which he would cast her head in bronze. David was a fan of the new music that we were all making, and he liked to play the harmonica with me when his day in the studio was over. He had completed the portraits of the violinist Yehudi Menuhin, the painter Oscar Kokoschka, and many fine studies of animals and birds, and yet it was his large-scale marbles that impressed me most, in particular Awakening Earth and Embracing Lovers. A terribly handsome man. 20 years my senior, David Wynne was my mentor at the time. Many an evening we spent around the generous table, his marvellous wife Jilly serving dinner with the children all around the pine board. Later on in the evening, out would come my guitar and I would sing. I needed to be part of this family at that time, for I knew that pop success endangered my well-being in many ways. David was very clear on one point when I asked him what an artist should beware of in early fame. He replied in an instant, "Mediocrity, my boy." I would only realize later just how true his advice was, and only after I had allowed myself to be at times seduced by my own fame. Sometimes David would take down a volume from his shelves of books and read to me the great lyric poems of our islands and reassure me that I was from the tradition. He would then ask me to sing a ballad from the past, to which he would play his harmonica. Pieces like Mary Hamilton. He knew I could render it in the true feeling. David would make a bronze sculpture of me too. Of course, I was very pleased, and when my mum saw the bronze head, she wanted one. Such portraits are usually finished in the dark green, aged look. My mother asked for a copy in clean red bronze. "How else could she polish it?" she asked. "The greenian is awfully dirty looking, son." I bought Gypsy a full-size billiard table for his birthday. David would climb in through the windows of the large ground-floor room to play the master of the sport. Later, when they found out about it, the rest of the family would stand and stare as Gyp smashed the balls home. Gyp was seeing the young Swedish girl, Yvonne, who had captured his heart with her soft Scandinavian charm, and she moved in. Feeling lonely, I asked the young American girl, Enid, over to stay. What did we need ladies to move in for? Surely they could not be thinking we wanted the evening to go on beyond the dawn. But Gyp had met a chick, and I had met a chick, and one thing led to another, and soon both girls had moved in. The first problem was the kitchen. The second and third problems followed after. The affable Gypsy Dave and the easygoing Dawn became irritated with each other. For the first time between us, there was heard a cross word, and the word was chick. Not that we didn't love the little darlings. How could we not? As they floated in and out of bedrooms and bathroom in no more than a top and panties. Bath time would never be the same. Not that we didn't like the variety of meals which were prepared for us. Open shrimp, Scandinavian sandwiches on black bread, or chicken soup and delicious goulash. Quite a change after beans on toast. It was just, they were always there. So it was a changed scene, man. We young men would take sides. Factions formed. Looks were seen on faces when things were not quite right. What was right? What was wrong? Gypsy and I had never given it much thought before now. Everything was either cool or a drag. Certainly never worth getting all fussed, bothered about. But life had changed, and something had to be done about it. What that was, we could not figure out as we guzzled the fine wine and smoked the good herb that late summer of 1966. That same September that the Superman album reached number one, the Beatles released their new album, Revolver. The last track of the record announced the teaching which John had been reading in the Tibetan Book of the Dead. George's song, Love to You, was accompanied by his Indian music. He and I had developed the use of the sitar and drone sounds that year. With the Superman single and album riding high in the charts all over the world, the first record of the new age, Mickey Most put me back in the studio. The title track of the new album was to be very much the opposite way, a cheeky little number called Mellow Yellow. I had written this as a sing-along at private parties, nothing else, a throwaway, but Mickey picked this one as the follow-up single. It is almost always best not to try to define what a song means. It is melody which moves us the most. But in the case of Mellow Yellow, the lyric had been much interpreted. So I'll give some idea of where I was coming from, man, if you dig my drift. Once again, a song of mine was described as drug-oriented. I was said to be singing of smoking dried bananas. I most certainly was not. Years later, the San Francisco singer Country Joe McDonald told me this story. He and his band, The Fish, devised a promotion for their local San Francisco club date. They would put the band on a truck and drive around Haight-Ashbury playing music. Joe found a giant banana on an old carnival waste lot and hoisted it on the truck with the band. To add a little twist, Joe released a story to the radio that one could get high smoking dried banana skins. The stunt would have lasted a weekend, Joe told me. But that weekend, Donovan, you released your single, Mellow Yellow. And the two events were connected for life. This was a radical act by Joe. He formed the band to be a political entertainment and also began the radical Rag Baby magazine. But what I really meant by the phrase Mellow Yellow, that I was a laid-back kind of dude, smoking the safe little green herb. The electric banana in my song was a reference to the vibrators which had become available through mail-order ads in the back pages of certain types of periodical. Then a Boston radio station banned the song, saying I was singing about abortion. How bizarre! The truth was that I had pasted word images together from newspapers, billboards, and magazines, collage style like pop artists have done since the painter Braque and Picasso saw the peeling posters of Paris in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. My friend John Lennon was doing the same. The rest of the lyric comes from saffron-robed monks, saffron cake from Cornwall, and a reference to my teenage girl fans at the time, mostly 14 and just mad about me. To the day he died, my favourite uncle, John Hunter in Glasgow, was convinced that I did not sing Electrical Banana. He insisted I sang I Like a Treacle Banana. Same song, different reading. The session to record the single Mellow Yellow was set, and this time the young John Paul Jones would arrange the track. I had been to New Orleans and heard the old cats of jazz play in Preservation Hall, and I wanted a New Orleans jazz feel, a march with a mellow mood. Many of the best horn players in London were in the studio that day, and these jazzers were in a mood of celebration. Once again, I was bringing together cats who had very little chance in 1960s to make the music they wanted to make. I tuned down the acoustic guitar to a D major drone, like the Slide Blues cats. Electric bass and guitar would thump along with me, and the horns would vamp. I sang live in the studio. We recorded a few takes and went up to the control room to listen. I sat in the corner and listened. Something was wrong. Mickey came over and asked me what was up. The arrangement? No. The parts were perfect. A strained atmosphere developed between me and John Paul Jones. I couldn't put my finger on it. Then a horn player spoke up. As I tried to explain the problem with the sound, I know what Donovan means, he said. He means we should put the hats on. The hats are horn mutes shaped like bowler hats. The musos all went down into the studio and put the hats on and played. A soft, mellow sound wafted out through the speakers. That was it. John Paul smiled, and I laughed as the track was recorded. The sound before the hats had been like a stripper's song in a nightclub. It wasn't mellow. Now it was. John Paul Jones and I would go on to make more great music. And Mickey knew he had another hit. He always knew. I used to invite Paul McCartney to many sessions, even though, as I say, Mickey was worried that the experimental sounds we were making all through 1966 would leak over into Beatles albums. But we were all absorbing each other's music so fast that it didn't really matter. Record releases were pretty well continuous then, and often only months would pass before the Beatles, the Stones, or myself released another. Paul came into the Mellow Yellow session. Contrary to what people say, he did not sing the whisper vocal that goes quite rightly. I sang this piece. Paul joined in on the party parts in the chorus. Paul and I did play together on other stuff, notably in Apple Studios with Mary Hopkins. The other tracks I recorded for the Mellow Yellow sessions were The Observation, Hampstead Incident, House of Janche, Sunny South Kensington, Museum, Sand and Foam, Young Girl Blues, and a song recently composed in Greece, Writer in the Sun. Sand and Foam and Young Girl Blues were both a return to solar acoustic, but all the others had the new jazz classical flavour with Latin, folk, rock, and poetry fusions. The lyrics of these songs provide a diary of my changes then. Linda Lawrence had been present in most of my songs on the Sunshine Superman album. I thought she was less apparent on Mellow Yellow, but she was there, even though I had tried to forget her. Melancholy pervades the gothic splendor of the track Hampstead Incident. Young Girl Blues is Linda in her disillusionment as a model in Los Angeles. A certain lovely sea sprite wandered through museum, and the blues singer Beverly Chamberlain, Bert Chanch and I, with three points of a triangle for a time in the house of Chanch. Fleeting affairs. There were lots of party girls floating in those days. If I couldn't have love, at least I would have fun. The sensual artwork with the Mellow Yellow cover showed where I was headed. A painting shows a sexy party girl smoking something in a long holder, probably Humboldt Indica marijuana of the highest quality. I was both sensual and spiritual that year. How else can we live in this age that the Hindus call Kali Yuga? John Cameron arranged some of these tracks, and he continued to excel in following the fusions I wanted. The lineup of musicians was the same as for the Sunshine Superman sessions. We had 9 tracks in the bag, and Mickey wanted a 10th. I played him a new song, which I had written about Enid. This tune was not especially unique, a basic blues progression with an old-fashioned turnaround. But Mickey liked it, and we recorded it with horns, expertly arranged by John Cameron. Big Jim Sullivan provided the raunchy blues guitar riffs. I tidied up my last affair. I lost so much, I don't care. Felt like a fool in a foolery. I'm well on the way to repair. The bleak city of the title was Enid's hometown in New York. But the lines, I tidied up my last affair. I lost so much, I don't care, spoke of Linda, the girl who I felt had wounded me, and oh, how I refused to heal. Neither was I well on the way to repair, as the song boasts. Did Enid know that our love could only end with one of us crying? The Mellow Yellow sessions were complete, and the album ready to follow the latest singles into the US charts. Yet still, the Superman album was not released in Britain. Nor was it when Mellow Yellow album went straight into the charts in the USA. That winter saw Donovan Leitch and Gypsy Dave still living on Wimbledon Common, a short 18 months from roughing it on the road. But now, with 5 hit singles, 2 hit EPs, 3 hit albums, and 2 new hit singles rising high on the top of the American charts. Not bad for 2 kids from the white ghetto.